I'm good. I'm very pumped up. You must have heard everything that's happening in the news right now, especially with the NBA and how they are taking a stand. They're showing up and they're talking about what they want the community to be, right? They're talking about diversity. They're not
Totally
afraid
taking
to
a
speak up.
stand. Yeah.
Exactly. They're not afraid to speak up. They're not afraid to even pause games, which is a big thing. It's a massive
It's a
deal.
massive thing because it means a lot of money lost.
Yes, and it means so much of backlash from people who are not supportive, but it also means talking about diversity, having these conversations and bringing up these issues and mentioning that, yes, they're real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's inspiring. It's inspiring when brands do that, inspiring when bigger brands like this stand up for something. And speaking of inspiring, you have
Yeah.
a guest for us today who is
I
super
am
inspiring.
very, I know, totally inspiring. I am very excited. DJ Osho is a person that really means a lot to people. Oreen is two-spirited and is Afro-Indigenous. And so speaks really from a position that most people could not. And as you said, very inspiring, and sits on tribal council, represents Pride, represents Vancouver tourism, travels around, speaks about a lot of different issues that are going on. And I couldn't think of somebody who is more at the apex of what is happening right now to speak to, you know, because right now I think brands really are paying attention and there's a lot of change to come. So I'm going to get Oreen on the line and we're going to bring in DJ Osho.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to just start off and say hello to you. And thank you for chatting with us.
This is Hot Squiles Noya, Squamish Aslahan Okomeok, Oreen Askew Queensna, Chinwa DJ Osho. Hello, everyone. My name is Oreen Askew, also known as DJ Osho, and I'm from the Squamish Nation in Vancouver, British Columbia. So, as you can see, I don't really look Indigenous. So, how I've been describing myself is Afro-Indigenous. So, kind of like African American on the outside, but Squamish on the inside. My mother is from the Squamish Nation, and my father is African American from Gary, Indiana. So, I have a very unique kind of mix. And we have Afro-Indigenous members of the Squamish Nation, but there aren't very many of us. I'd say probably about 25 to maybe 40 of us. So it's interesting. I never really used to think much about it being mixed because I live on the Squamish Nation Reserve, the Capilano Reserve, and I've lived here my whole entire life. I've actually taken over my grandmother's house. She left it to me in her will. She was from Squamish Nation as well. So I live and breathe my Indigenous culture, but it's just really interesting because I don't look Indigenous.
It's
So
pretty crazy though to think like right now, at least, well, I would say specifically in Canada, but spilling over into the States. I mean, you know, we the whole Black Lives Matter conversation coming up, and then we were saying, you know, well, where's the Indigenous conversation? And then this notion of an Afro-Indigenous conversation happening, and that is what you are. You know, and for me, knowing someone personally, made a big difference. I could understand it a little bit more, not just in terms of the Indigenous conversation happening because we're also having the Black Lives Matter conversation, but in terms of somebody actually representing in themselves Afro-Indigenous.
It's been a really overwhelming year with COVID-19, but just the fact that I try to explain it to people, but it's just I can't even put it to words. Like it's basically all of my spirits inside of me have been called to action. The Afro-Indigenous spirit and the two spiritness have just like come out of me, and it's like you have to say something, you have to do something because people aren't going to understand from your point of view unless you say something. So I'm the type of person where I can't just sit there and say nothing. Like I was just kind of looking back on the memories of when George Floyd was murdered, and just everything I've been doing this summer, just so busy speaking and DJing at all these different events around Vancouver, and trying to have my voice heard.
At the intersection of everything, you're at the intersection of gender, you're at the intersection of African communities and Indigenous communities, and it's right at the center of everything. So I can imagine how overwhelming it must get, you know, just being part of everything and yet having to fight back with everything.
Well, yeah, and it's so interesting when I speak on different things, like if I'm speaking at an Indigenous event or like a Black event, it's just the similarities and the differences that I see. It's just like, I'm like, we all have to work together. Like I've seen the negativity part about it too. It's just like, you know, some people in my community have even said, like, when BLM was like held up on this pedestal, like right at the beginning, like around when George Floyd died, some people in my community were like, well, why didn't the Black people stand with us when we were protesting pipelines? It's like, we did stand with you. So I feel it's really important for people to stand in solidarity, but I came to the understanding that some people just, they can't do that because of how they feel inside. But then it's like me, I'm mixed with both. So I'm seeing it from, I'm kind of in the middle.
You have the perspective,
right? Yeah, exactly.
The entire worldview. Mm-hmm. And speaking of perspective, speaking of solidarity, you know, as president of the BCMA, as a brand marketeer, I have brands coming to me. We have discussions all the time about how brands can break through to these diverse communities, and all of these communities rather than a single one. And instead of just catering to the masses as a whole, talk about these conversations, you know, talk about Afro-Indigenous communities, LGBTQIA2 spirited communities, and more. How can they understand and show support on a deeper level? Can you tell us a little bit more about your perspective on this?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I've been watching a lot of brands and seeing kind of what they're doing. But I actually did talk to Rebecca about this. A production company actually reached out to me, or actually, no, they didn't reach out to me. They put out a post and said, you know, what's going on right now is not right. We're the professionals in this industry. And we need BIPOC voices and stories to be told. So they said they're going to be picking 4 stories, and they're going to work with them for a year and have like a huge production about their story. And so a friend of mine tagged me, and I messaged them, and I told them my story, and the camera crew was at my house like the next day, and we're currently working on a year project, and they've basically been following me around to protests and gigs and just hearing my story and what I have to say. So that would be my recommendation for brands, is to just get out there and hear other people's stories and perspective, right? It's all perspective. And I've had people, Caucasian people, message me and ask, you know, what can we do? Like, we feel so horrible about what's going on, you know, can we send you money? Like, can we send you skip the dishes coupons and things like that? And how I try to explain it is that, you know, Black people and Indigenous people too, we're sort of in mourning, because logging on to social media every day and seeing Black people or Indigenous people being murdered, like it's a video game. Like that's how I explain it to people. It's like, we're in mourning right now. So how would you treat your friend or your family member who is in mourning? Probably just try to be there for them and try to talk to them and give them a shoulder to lean on. So when I explain it kind of that way, they kind of more understand it more. But I get it, because if you don't know, you don't know, right? And the only way you're going to find out is if you ask. And I think it's scary for some people to actually reach out to us and ask, because they're just afraid they're going to get rejected. But I kind of take it with a grain of salt, because like I said, if people don't know what to do, they don't know what to do. Yeah.
So you think like brands should actually reach out to members of the community, just flat out have one-on-one conversations?
Totally.
And what brands do you think are doing that? Sorry, Rebecca.
No, that's good. I was going to say, I think that's like, that's a totally different approach than just monitoring social media or conversations. Well,
and that's so interesting, because for me, like when, what was it, June the 2nd, when it was Blackout Tuesday, I feel like it was almost stole as a social media trend.
Yeah.
And I told people, I was like, those black squares are traumatizing to me. Yeah. And they're like, well, what do you mean? It's like bringing a call to action. I'm like, it's bringing a call to action, but then what? What are they going to do? And it's kind of happened. It's the momentum slowed down a little bit, but things like that, I don't know. They're frustrating for me. And you know, every Black person doesn't think that way. I just had to say how I felt about that. And people were just like, whoa, I'm actually going to take that down. And you know, you're kind of right, Aureen. And I said, yeah, like just try to get different perspectives.
It's sort of like people putting up the pride flag during June. And yeah. it seems like a token.
Yeah.
But then again, you don't know the person on the other end of it. Sometimes it is meaningful for them. So it's a difficult kind of place to be in. But I think the point is you have to actually back up using those symbols, not just as tokens, mm-hmm. but with actual conversations. So if you're going to use that on social media, you have to actually have the conversations.
And I totally think it's a learning experience too, because I read articles too put out there that black square with the hashtag Black Lives Matter was taking away from Black Lives Matter, because when you click on the hashtag, all you're going to see is black squares.
Yeah, no, I mean, as I'm not part of the community, I'm outside and I'm learning, I'm taking it as much as I can, I'm listening, I'm talking to people. And I understood that what is happening with that is the action is being taken away. There's lip service, there's tokenism, like you said. And there is nothing beyond that because of those black squares. And it's also wiping out the actual messages that people were trying to spread, because those were getting somehow buried into social media. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I get what you're saying. And when it comes to brands listening and understanding these communities, asking the right questions, are there any brands actually doing that?
Well, I actually tuned into an NBA game yesterday. Unfortunately, the Raptors lost, but everywhere you looked on that television, it said Black Lives Matter. I was blown away. I was like, whoa. Or messages or names of the people that have passed away from police brutality, and nothing's been done about it, right? So I'm thinking, wow, like imagine if every league, every sports league, every brand like did something kind of like that. I think they're doing an incredible job. The WNBA as well. And the NHL, I know they took a couple of nights off, which I thought they weren't going to, but I was shocked that they did.
Yeah, that one was a big shocker, because you can see, like, you know, where you have predominantly black players standing up and saying, look, we're not playing. Like, and forcing the owners, the networks, the brands to all listen up and say, hey, sorry, this is, but then to have predominantly white players also take that stand, I think is a really pivotal shift, and hopefully that will continue.
Well, I actually just shared a meme about this earlier. This whole thing about like white supremacy and brutality, this is not an Afro-Indigenous problem. Like, the white supremacy needs to be fixed. And who's going to fix it? It's white people, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I think the NHL was huge. Like you said, they're predominantly white, and they're taking a stand and saying, you know what? This is wrong. Like, we're even saying it. So you have to listen to us. You have to.
You know, what really comes to mind with you is community, you know, and the importance of building community. And you were saying to me about Nike really having an impact. Can you speak about that, like as a brand that's actually doing some good community-wise and with their messaging?
Yeah, definitely. A couple of their commercials have just blown me away, and just kind of how they stuck by Colin Kaepernick, because he's the one who took a huge stand by taking a knee. But yeah, he put his career on the line, and Nike has totally stood behind him the whole entire time. And I just think they're doing a great job with things like that, because the NFL won't sign that guy right now. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge NFL fan. I really like the Steelers.
but that's a joke. No, I'm just joking.
Come on now.
But listen, the other part of the whole community question that, or, you know, point that I wanted to make You've worked with Pride, you've worked with Vancouver Tourism, you've been this ambassador. And like, tell us a little bit about that. And, you know, because I mean, there's a lesson there too for tourism brands, for festival brands, you know, not to just sort of like what they did. From my understanding, you can explain. It wasn't just sort of saying, putting you out there to say like, hey, come to the city, we do this. It was a little bit more involved than that. And yeah, if you could speak to that, that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. I have a really good relationship with the Vancouver Pride Society. And one thing we haven't touched on either in my intro is I'm a politician. I'm actually on Squamish Nation Council.
I did a little bit say that.
Yeah. Sometimes it gets left out of the conversation.
You need to talk about that. You need to talk about that.
You're out there. Tell us about everything.
But that being said, like, my portfolio is basically Pride for our nation. So I'm in meetings with the Vancouver Pride Society, and they're so amazing. They basically said, you know what, Irene? What can we do for your community? How can we involve you? And I'm just like, see, it's just things like that. When you're not asked that question very much, when it does get asked, it's like, it's shocking, but it's amazing. And I have a really good relationship with them, and we're working together on different events, more virtual events. And last year I was one of the grand marshals in the Pride Parade. Very different. They did a virtual Pride. I got to do my own show. They gave me my own weekly DJ show, which was so much fun. So I got to bring, Brock Baker, he goes by DJ Metco. He's from my community, and he's only around 21, and he wants to be a DJ. So I said, come along with me, and we'll do it. We'll get out there. We'll put you out there as much as possible, right? Vancouver Tourism, yes, I have a really good relationship with them as well. And it's interesting because we did that Pride kind of like commercial promo like a few years ago, and now it just keeps popping up like all over the city. Like I'm on the back of
wow,
I love it.
It's popping up, right?
It's wonderful.
I just happen to have it right here, but but it's so interesting how when you do one thing, and they just ask me my story and which neighborhood was my favorite in Vancouver, like what I like to eat, and like that's been kind of like their representation of Vancouver, because I've been born and raised in North Vancouver. And I'm 37 now, so it's just building the relationships with the actual people. I think that's going to be very beneficial for companies and brands. It's just knowing how what really goes on in certain communities. You're gonna really thrive, I believe.
Well, I think that's totally it, because what we found is that, you know, brands used to take the stand of they'd market to the masses. Mm-hmm. And just get out as much to as many as you can. But now everything has shifted. The niche is now the masses. And that's really, I think, the point is, like, you know, but for Vancouver to take that positioning, that we're going to make Pride a central part of our tourism message. You know, or and actually pick somebody to represent that represents from the point of view, like, you couldn't, I mean, I don't know, you couldn't get somebody more diverse than yourself to really represent. And not only that, but it, like, what you do for a living, being on council, being a DJ, being, you know, activist, like all of these different things, right? I think it's very important for a brand to actually concentrate on the community, on the niche, on, you know, specific conversations that are going on, not just on like the overall trends.
And speaking from experience, also having worked with so many brands and being on the marketing side of things, I know one point that you made, which is very relevant, is about asking. A lot of brands fall into this trap of, we want to understand, but we're going to be an observer, we're going to listen. And we're going to take this data and we're going to take this research and accordingly from that consider our ads. And what happens as a result is tone deaf communication. And we've seen that. We've seen those instances, so many people. And it's so nice to hear from you that there are brands actually making that effort to go the extra mile and have these conversations. And it's not easy. It's not easy to ask the questions, but having that courage to do that and having the sensibility to do that. That's important.
Basically, in Vancouver, there's three host nations in the territory. There's Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh. So our emails are full. Our phones are ringing off the hook because people want to work with us, right? Mm. And I get it all the time. People are like, Oreen, how do we get involved? Like, how do we work with you? And I try to explain to them, it takes more than just an email.
Yeah.
It comes from being an entrepreneur too. I'm all about building relationships. If someone's going to actually take the time to get to know the Squamish Nation or myself or, you know, certain situations, then I want to work with them. It's not just like a one-off, like cold call or, you know, an email saying, you know, I want to work with you. It's like, well, there's 10,000 other people that want to work with us too, right?
So did I just get you at a really good time?
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, I'm throwing a party at South by Southwest. But again, that was all around the community. You know, it was the LGBTQ IA community. And that was also part of International Women's Day. And so there was a lot going on when we did that. And since then, there's been just a lot more conversations. And that's why, you know, I'm really thankful that you decided to chat with us, take this time, right? I knew you'd do it for me, but that's another thing.
And I hear, I thought I was the one that was the reason. I'm just kidding. I was trying to build something here and I gave up halfway. But speaking of all of this, you know, everything that Rebecca mentioned, everything, you know, when she mentioned you, I'm not kidding. I low-key stalked you everywhere just to understand more about who we are talking and, you know, better have an informed conversation. I don't want to come here being a complete ignorant. And what struck me was the number of inspirational initiatives and causes that you've been part of. There's just so many. One, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you manage everything. So that's one big thing. But also tell us about these. Can you speak to these causes and initiatives that you've been a part of?
Well, I find it, I don't want to say easy, but I feel like the ones that I actually work with and I'm a part of are a part of me. So when someone asks me to speak at a protest or at a pride event, I have no problem, like, even if it's, you know, not compensated, because that's basically who I am. And I do work with a lot of youth. I feel like people always ask me, how do you connect with the youth so well? And I try to explain to them that I'm still one of them, pretty much. So.
One hell of a DJ. That was incredible night. Anyways, go on.
but yeah, and I try to kind of still speak their language because I feel like sometimes they're left out of the process, you know, especially in politics. There's a lot of older people. I'm not trying to be an ageist here, but there's a lot of older people making decisions for them. And I'm one of the younger counselors, actually. I think I'm the third youngest. So we've made a lot of changes. And yeah, December 2021 is our next election. So I'm on a 4-year term right now. So I don't know if I'm going to run again, but I've learned so much and connected with the youth so much that I think outside of that, I'm going to continue to keep working with the initiatives that I've been working with. And it's, like I said, it's easier for me because I try to work with the ones that are kind of already inside of me and it's what I do. So I'm speaking to young Black and Indigenous youth, two-spirited youth as well. So,
which is amazing, you know, whether it's in politics or it's in the brand world or it's in education or it's everywhere. It's 2020. It's the year of perfect vision.
Mm-hmm. And one saying that I heard at the council table quite a bit when I first got elected was, wait, why are we changing this? This is the way we've always done it. And so I was like, okay, now I remember why I'm here, right? Why my people elected me, because that's like the worst thing you could say.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of just building off people with that mentality and educating them and saying, you know, we want to move forward. We want to leave our youth with something when we're not the decision makers anymore. So kind of starting the wheel and handing it down to them. because I talk about it too. I say it's almost like a selfish thing to give back to youth because I want them to be taking care of me when I'm older, right? So pushing me in a wheelchair, that looks really great, you
know? Well, speaking of that though, you know, I know a bit about your family, but tell me, like, tell us what inspires you, stories from your family, from your history, like things from the past that really have inspired you today, right at this moment.
Well, just how resilient our people are, because we always talk about it, like we've been here since time immemorial, but I talk about it too as we just had our 97th amalgamation day, and so July 23rd, 1923, our 16 chiefs, hereditary chiefs from the Squamish Nation, signed an agreement with the Canadian government, basically forming the Squamish Nation. So now we have over 4,000 members. Now, our ancestors were very smart to do that because now we're kind of like what people are going for, their ambitions, their goals for their nations, because our ancestors were smart enough to do that back then. So 97 years we've been the Squamish Nation. And so people really look up to us and we're kind of building the blueprint for other nations. So I'm just so proud of their resilience. And talking about my family, my mom was a single mom and she's totally inspired me because I watched her work from the welfare system, and she had 4 kids, and I saw her do every job in the book. I'm talking like 7-Eleven, like A&W, our local ski resort here, Grouse Mountain. I just saw her do everything she could to support us. And then she actually retired as a First Nations support worker in her school district 44. So just, I just remember, I felt like I was just like looking up at her, watching her do everything she had to do or could do to support 4 children. And I think I get that work ethic from her, is just doing everything she could to make ends meet.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if you want to speak to the fact that, like, you know, you have some really crazy stories that I don't think any of us would be able to understand from your grandmother, your great-grandmother, residential schools. I think it was your aunt.
My aunt was trans. She actually passed away in the downtown east side from overdose, what was it? I think about 14 or 15 years ago. But yeah, she had to go, she was born male. And when she was male, you could tell like that she was trans, right? So she had to go to residential school out to Seashell, and it was pretty bad. Like the fact that she had to be away from my grandparents and my mom, her sister. So, My other aunts and my mom actually went to residential school in North Vancouver, which is about St. Paul's, which is about maybe 5-10 minutes away from where we live. But they went to day school, so they got to go home at night, which is really interesting because I think it was 2008 when the Prime Minister at the time, Harper, apologized for residential school, and people who went to residential school got compensated. Well, my mom and my aunts were left out of that compensation because they only went to day school. So there's been a case, and my mom actually just recently got her compensation, but they brought it to court and they said, you know, all the students that went to residential school deserve some sort of compensation, but that took 12 years, right?
Like if brands really want to know more, because on the one hand, you know, you've got a brand, the brand's job is to sell things, but at the same time, we look to brands to, like, we all use certain products or live in this world. So it can't just be about selling. It has to be about standing up for something, you know, and the fact that, like, some horrific things have happened and the conversations are still going on now. And so how can there be reconciliation? How can there be any of this that's happening? Sensitivity to whether you're Black, whether you're Indigenous, whether you're Afro-Indigenous or Two-Spirited, you know, I fear that brands might be afraid to even go there. What do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. And I think times are changing now in 2020, whereas before you could kind of turn your cheek away from the history and what's going on. And it's interesting when people say reconciliation, like when I'm in meetings, I tell people to be careful with that word. They're like, well, what do you mean? I said, well, that word gets thrown around quite a bit. And I think you should be saying reconciliation instead of reconciliation, because.
Oh, that's good. I've never been told that. And I work with different Indigenous creators, so I've never really been told that. So that's a good, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And I warn them that sometimes that word triggers our people.
Yeah.
Because they think it's a lie. Like, the young people have come up with the term reconciliation is dead.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
You know what, it's interesting, because reconciliation, like, I had been taught that by somebody in the community who was older. And I always thought, but there's no real action to it. So the fact that you're saying reconciliation makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's an action word, right? So you kind of have to do something for there to be reconciliation.
And so how do you think brands should approach this? Just should they just start with the conversation and hearing?
Yeah, I think that's the first step for sure. Because if it was my way, like, brands would be doing way more, but you got to start with the conversation too, because like you said, some brands are scared to even ask, whereas asking the question is the first step. And then you kind of take it from there. And there's going to be people who want to help educate them or their companies, but then there's going to be people who don't want to. So you kind of got to be ready for that. And I didn't grow up on reserve until I was about 13 years old. So I see it from so many different perspectives. And and just from the work that I've done, like, I started out in radio, kind of like Oprah Winfrey.
Ooh, I started in radio too.
Yeah, see?
I had one question, you know, upon learning that you are also into politics, and that's one thing when Rebecca mentioned that brands are afraid. What I wanted to ask is, you know, do brands have the power to also influence policies through these actions? Because you've been on the side of all of these initiatives and causes, but you've also been on the other side, which is inside the system. Mm-hmm. Do you think they can bring about that change with what they do?
Oh, totally, definitely. And that's what I always say about politics when I try to get the young ones to run, is just like, you got to run, even if you don't get in. Like, we need different perspectives at that table. And it's interesting when people, like, I've had friends say, like, oh, I'm not into politics, I don't like to get political. I'm like, everything is political. I was like, me being born was political, you know? The races or the spirits that I have, they're all facing injustices, and that's political. So I think we have to take it, kind of this, change the old school narrative of what a politician is. And what that is getting people like myself at those tables to discuss these different policies. And that can come with branding as well. And a lot of these brands, these huge brands, have a lot of influence. Like, I'm still blown away by the NBA. Like, I just, like, Black Lives Matter was everywhere, even on the basketball court, on their t-shirts, on their shoes. It's just amazing.
They can use their influence for good. They can use their influence to move the needle, so to say. Exactly. All right. On a lighter note, we were taking trips back in time, and, you know, Rebecca, we kept going back to South by Southwest and time traveling. So I wanted to ask, as a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Did you?
Well, when I was 13, I would make mix CDs for my friends and put my voice on them. So it kind of foreshadowed, but my dream, I still dream about it since I was 13, is opening for Janet Jackson.
I love it. We gotta make that happen.
Yes. I know, right? She is the queen. She is my favorite every time she's in town. I even flew to Vegas because I thought it was her last tour last year, just to see her at the MGM.
Do you sing?
Do I sing? In the shower.
You should. You have a great voice. No, but her beat is incredible. Like, I'm just picturing that night of just, like, seeing everybody and,
The interesting thing about DJing, too, is I talk about it, too, like, in the And the commercial for Vancouver Tourism as well, it's just, I don't know, as Indigenous people, I feel like we take the beat like differently. Because I've been raised around Indigenous culture, and we're just raised to know that, you know, where the drum comes from, the deer's hide, and like the beat is supposed to be like the mother's beat in the womb. Like, I remember falling asleep next to drum beats at our local powwow, because that's what it is. That's what the drum beat is. And I'm trying to put it into words, but it's just, I can't explain how, you know, it's from the heartbeat. And that's kind of how I go into music. And I go at it as like, you know, would this be something in my community that people would like to hear, or like my mom would like to hear, my auntie would like to hear, you know, just kind of like simplify it. But it's worked out pretty well.
that explains too how you have multiple beats coming in all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Because listening to you, I could, like, you know, I could hear real like a real black beat, you know, like it was just like that was. But then you're right, like this Indigenous beat that you speak of, at least from my perspective, having witnessed it, can be very different when they're mixed together, because it's all the same thing, right? And beats really are just the heart and soul. It's like it's our heart beating. It's what makes us.
Yeah, it's nature's rhythm.
There you go, Haim. Next party.
I'll be there behind DJ Osho coming up with slogans like that. You know? It's just like banners.
Just don't be off the beat and do something like.
I cannot hold a beat. I am so tone deaf. I cannot hold a beat. So.
But you're still full of life. Okay, before we sign off,
yes.
One thing, if you had to say, as Haim and I were thinking about this, like if you had one message, Haim, you ask it, because it was whether it was one message you wanted to give to a brand, or whether you like what message you phrase it better.
I mean, if you had one sentence, you know, to tell a brand who is listening to you, who's trying to understand, what would you say to them? Something.
Definitely. I think listening is a huge part about it. You know, I've had my own experiences where I have spoken out and said something isn't right here, whether it has to do with racism or homophobia, and people have kind of like brushed it off, right? So when somebody's telling you what's going on for them, it's listening and not interrupting them and putting kind of like your spin on your experiences, because it's not your experience, it's somebody else's experience. So that was about 10 sentences. I think you asked for one.
That's okay. It's about respecting, listening, and going forward with it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's okay.
And it's with that we shall leave you, and thank you,
thank you
so much. You know, we will be in touch soon, and I just really treasure you. You're amazing. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Thanks again. Bye.